Welcome back to Puckcast with Statsman and AJ, RotoWire's Fantasy Hockey Show. Folks, we're 1 month away from the NHL playoffs, and I'm Paul Bruno coming to you from just north of Toronto in Richmond Hill, and you can follow me at Statsman22, and my co-host, as always, is AJ Scholes, a great follow, at AJScholes24, based in another hockey-mad part of the continent in the United States, specifically Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. And business is picking up for us because not only have we got the upcoming playoffs in the NBA and NHL, and we got baseball ramping up in spring training. But we're going to talk hockey on the show as always here. And today I thought, AJ, we would focus on the playoff races as we are, as I say, less than 4 weeks away from the start of the postseason, and things are really shaping up to be contested right down to the wire in most of the four divisions. There's lots of stuff to look at. So I thought we'd spend some time doing that, beginning with the Atlantic Division and the Eastern Conference, the Atlantic Division. And we see right now Boston and Florida are neck and neck with 95 and 94 points respectively. Florida's played one game less. They're 1 point behind. So a virtual tie there. The Leafs are in kind of a no man's land. They're 9 points behind these the Florida Panthers and 7 points ahead of Tampa with a game in hand. So I think you can safely say they're going to wind up in third. And Tampa's really started to pull away a little bit from Detroit. I have to feel sorry for the Red Wings, AJ. That's where I want to start with you. The injury to Dylan Larkin really certainly has impacted them in a negative way, and they're floundering with a 2-8 mark in their last 10, and Tampa looks like they're going to be one of the two wild cards. What are you looking for down the stretch from this race?
Yeah, as you said, the top is really, you know, a two-dog show there, figuring out, you know, which team gets to avoid playing Toronto. Possibly playing the Lightning or the Capitals as a consolation prize instead of avoiding the Leafs. I think the priority here for the Red Wings is really just to hold on, right? Larkin skated this morning, shouldn't be expected to play today, but if they can be right there, and I know you said the Lightning opening up a little bit of a gap there, but for the wild card race, the Red Wings are just 1 point out. So if they can hold on and be right in the mix there, then you add back Dylan Larkin. It's almost like a late trade deadline acquisition, right? So I think just, you know, stick with it as long as you can. They've struggled of late. 2-8-0 is the recent record here. So I think they need to really hold on and wait for Larkin to get back.
Well, I don't want to discount the Buffalo Sabres entirely too. I should have mentioned them. They're 3 points behind the Red Wings, but Detroit has a game in hand on them. So they're really on the periphery, and they've gone 6-3-1 their last 10. But it's the first two teams, AJ. I got a question for you. How much time and energy does Florida or Boston spend on really going hard to get the top seed here? And might that be a detriment when the playoffs do roll around if they've spent too much energy on this? It's a bit of a quandary for me, but I'm sure these teams both want to run the table the rest of the way. But where do you sit on that one? Do you think they have to play the heck out of their top players at each position to get that role? Or are they going to just coast into the postseason and say, you know what, we're one or two, it doesn't really matter?
See, the problem. So if this was a discussion about whether they're trying to win the President's Trophy, I would say, don't worry about that. But like one or two versus, you know, one versus two is a big difference in your matchup. You're either getting the Maple Leafs or right now Boston would get Washington. I would very much rather play Washington than the Maple Leafs. I think most teams would agree with that. Depending on what New York does in the point standing, you could end up with the Lightning. I think I'd still rather take the Lightning over the Leafs. So I think it has some value, again, to avoid Toronto in that first round.
And then you touched on the Metro Division with mentioning of New York. They look to be in good shape with a 4-point lead over Carolina. Both teams have played 68 games. And I'm looking at the spread of home and away. Carolina's played three more home games, so they're dynamite on home ice, but they're pretty good on the road too. They've won 20 games already. Ditto for the Rangers, and they've got a dominant home record. You should expect that with two of the top teams in the conference. They're duking it out again for the number one seed there. And I don't know if there's much to choose between Philadelphia or Washington in terms of third or fourth either, AJ. There's one point that separates them. Even the Islanders are only at 73 points. That's 3 points behind Philly, two behind Washington. So a number of teams still in the mix. I hate to say it, but I think your Penguins are dropping by the wayside and likely to miss the postseason. May I hope you come to grips with that yourself. But the compelling race for me is third and fourth in this division, as well as first and second. So we got two sets of races, and I wonder what you forecast down the stretch.
What's interesting here is you look at the goal differentials for some of these teams. You've got Philadelphia at minus six. Meanwhile, Washington is minus 27, and the Islanders are minus 20. So I think there's a real possibility that whoever doesn't get third could be outside of the playoffs. If you have Detroit making a surge, and possibly Buffalo. I mean, they're 6-3-1 in their last couple of games. They've played two more games than either the Islanders or the Capitals, but they're obviously in the playoff hunt here as well. A little bit further out, but still in there. So for me, I think it is a battle between Philadelphia, Washington, and maybe the Islanders for that third spot, because I think there's a real danger that the two wildcard spots both go to the Atlantic.
And AJ, as we get closer to the end of the season, and assuming these races remain this tight, we're going to go do a deeper dive in this part of the show when we look at the remaining games and say, okay, this is how many they got. This is how many contenders they're facing. Any games between two teams vying for a similar spot in the standings should be highlighted as well. We'll give you all that stuff in the coming weeks as we anticipate the end of the regular season in less than a month. We look over to the Western Conference, AJ. The Central Division is really something because the top three teams are in a tie in terms of total points. It's the games that separate them. Winnipeg right now played the fewest games to get to 91 points with 67. Colorado's played 68 and Dallas 69. All three teams boasting winning records over the last 10 games. So they're galloping toward the finish line and really not a whole lot to choose between these three teams. Nashville's been coming hard on the outside turn. They're 8-0-2 in their last 10, and they are fourth place right now, 7 points clear of St. Louis, who are fanning their faint playoff hopes with a 6-3-1 record. So the top five teams in this division, all sporting winning records, but really it's the top three teams that are vying for the seeding that is so critical, as you mentioned. And right now I have to give Winnipeg this light edge because of those games in hand. They've been dynamite at home, but so have Colorado and Dallas. So home ice advantage will be a big factor. And you know that the top two seeds really want to lock that down. So the third place team and the second place team will meet in a first round. And you want to avoid that because it looks right now, Colorado and Dallas, two of the top teams in the league, one of them will be gone after the first round, assuming the playoffs, the seedings stay the way they are.
Totally agree, Paul. I think, you know, I don't think St. Louis realistically is in the mix here. I think Nashville is just firmly cemented in that power play or that wild card spot. I don't see them competing with the top three teams at the top. St. Louis probably needs some help from, you know, Vegas and or Nashville to struggle to get in to the playoffs in that wild card spot. But I think Nashville's got a pretty decent lock on that. Not a huge gap, but I mean, 7 points over the Blues. That's a big group. But again, 9 for them to get there. You look at these records, you look at the recent performance, you know, Colorado is surging. 8-2-0, 6-game win streak. You know, they're going to give Winnipeg a run for their money. I think the Jets probably have the best goaltender of these three teams. And that's no slam on Ottinger or Georgiev. I just think Connor Hellebuyck is pretty much going to walk away with the Vezina this year. And so I give Winnipeg the edge, just like you do, to secure the top spot. But as far as, you know, once the Stanley Cup playoffs begin, it's hard to not give a good hard look at Colorado.
And maybe the most interesting division for me because of the star power of a couple of teams that are not in first place factors into the discussion. When we look at the Pacific Division, AJ, certainly Vancouver has an 8-point advantage right now. Although on Edmonton, though, the Oilers do have 3 games in hand. They have to win out those games to close that gap significantly, obviously, and try to get that first seed. But I think Vancouver is looking really good to get it. And Edmonton has to be commended for the run that they've been on since they started the season so poorly. They've vaulted up to the standings, but I think second place in the division is as high as they're going to go. And that means another first-round matchup likely against either Los Angeles or Vegas. Those two teams tied with 79 points and 67 games played. We've seen a lot of Edmonton-Los Angeles matchups, and both teams have won out in the last 2 years, so that would be kind of interesting. But who wouldn't want to see Edmonton and Vegas in the first round, AJ, should the Golden Knights take third spot? And that would set up another great matchup in the first round, just like we highlighted in the Central Division. So lots to look forward to here. But I think Vancouver can be safe in suggesting that to their fans that they're going to be first place in this division and get possibly Los Angeles or Vegas in the first round as their prize, if there is one, and or maybe Nashville, if you think that they are going to get that matchup too. That could be the best outcome of all in terms of the top seeds getting Nashville over Vegas. I think that's a big advantage.
The only thing I'll add here is that Edmonton does have three games in hand on Vancouver, and that could get them within 2 points if they were to win all three of those contests. So I would say they're not out of the hunt here, but as far as like playoff teams go, I think these four are just about it. It would take a pretty significant collapse by the Golden Knights, who haven't been playing the best lately, 4-5-1. But I just don't see any of these four teams dropping out or Calgary getting themselves in a position to compete for a spot. So I think we'll see all four of these teams that we mentioned in the playoffs with, you know, whether Vegas can track down the Kings remains to be seen. But I definitely think there's some, you know, jockeying for position here. But as far as who's in and who's out, I think the Pacific is probably the most set of any of the four divisions.
AJ, we've strayed from our usual fare for a few weeks now, but I want to get back into it because it's critical now as we reach the fantasy end of the fantasy hockey regular season and get ready for the playoffs there. You want to know who's hot and who could help your club if you're dealing with a few injuries. We'll touch on the injury news later in the show, but there are some names that are emerging as real hot shooters right now that could certainly be helpful to a fantasy manager out there. So I hope you have your pads and pencils ready or get the smartphones ready to take some notes here, because there's some names that you haven't heard for much of the season or who are really coming on right now. And AJ, why don't you lead us in some of the talk about some of the hot forwards that are very available in a lot of fantasy leagues out there?
Well, number one, right at the top, we have to discuss Evgeny Kuznetsov, 23% ownership, which makes sense after he was, you know, entered the player assistance program and then was waived and passed through and down in the minors. Like, I'm not surprised to see that percentage all the way down there. But Carolina has essentially revamped their top six here, bringing in Kuznetsov, originally playing in with Gensel. They flipped things most recently. Gensel's now with Aho, but that means Kuznetsov is still playing with Svechnikov. Not a bad assignment. There's really nobody that's going to challenge him, in my opinion, for the second-line center role. Kotkaniemi, I just don't see it. Jordan Staal is firmly cemented as their third line center at this point in his career, and he's great at it. No knock on him. So I just don't see anybody knocking Kuznetsov off that spot other than maybe himself. So I love that as a potential late pickup here. Another name to mention is, we'll stick with center here, is Lars Eller. Now, he's not going to move into the top six unless he moves to wing, which I just don't see that happening. So that is a downside to Eller, but he's been getting minutes on the top power play unit, playing alongside Michael Bunting, Chris Letang, Brian Rust, and perhaps most importantly, Sidney Crosby. So the fact that Eller is able to get that first power play, and you've seen it in his production, 2 goals, 3 assists, 2 of those 5 points coming with the man advantage. I think we'll continue to see things from him there. Then I'll go back. I'll stick with Pittsburgh because, you know, you got to talk about new guys and new places, new assignments. Michael Bunting is getting the Evgeny Malkin line assignment. I think it's a good spot for him to be in. His production has been decent over his last 4 games. He's got 3 points. including one with the power play. Again, they've got him right now on that number one unit playing with Eller and Crosby. What's really encouraging about Bunting, you look at his last six games, all but one of those have been three or more shots and a couple four-shot outings. So he's putting plenty of pucks on net. You love to see that from a guy in this role. And I think more points are really possible coming out of Bunting.
Look at this guy talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins at length here when they're out of the playoff picture, folks.
I didn't say they're going to make the playoffs.
You're touting them down the stretch too. Just thought it was kind of funny. A couple of names you mentioned. I'm going to go around the board here and look at the top name. Filip Kurashev, listed as a center in a lot of leagues, but he's actually playing wing on the top line with Bedard, who's back and flying right now. And you can see the numbers reflected in Kurashev's totals last week. He played three games and tallied three goals and three assists, two power play points. So you know he's getting a lot of time with the primetime rookie and looking very good as a result. So that's a compelling play. And I like the way Alex Nylander's looked in the last little while, AJ. He's a chip off the old block and starting to challenge his brother for the hottest Nylander in the NHL right now. In fact, you might say Alex is the hotter one right at the moment with three goals and one helper in his last four games. But look at the shots on goal, 16, as he's playing top line minutes on the wing. And by all accounts, very much earning his ice time with solid play up and down the ice. So two guys on lesser known and non-playoff teams caught my eye. But I'm going to go back to a team that's the cream of the crop in their division, the Winnipeg Jets, featuring Nikolaj Ehlers. He's owned in 61% of leagues out there, despite the fact that he's been on a bit of a tear in the last little while, playing second line minutes on the wing and getting power play time. He tallied 5 points last week. So he's another guy that you ought to be looking for to boost your issues if you have any in the forward ranks.
Yeah, I think, you know, just looking at a few more names to talk out here, I'll mention a pair of dual eligible guys. You've got Klim Kostin over with San Jose rather, and a solid week from him, really very minimal ownership. And that makes sense. He wasn't playing a lot with Detroit, plenty of healthy scratches, but he's got 4 points in five games with the Sharks. They've got him on a first line role with Mikael Granlund. I think he's really worth considering. I mean, almost any league out there, you should be able to find him. And again, bonus points for that dual eligibility. And the other player in that category, Mason Appleton, center and wing for the Winnipeg Jets, doesn't have as good of an assignment. He's in the third role and very much a streaky player. I mean, you look at his game log, there are stretches. February was downright brutal for him, 1 point in 11 games. But of late, you're looking at 5 assists, 2 goals in his last 8 games. So take the good with the bad. He's dual eligible. That helps, but a bit of a streaky player who's hot right now. So you have to kind of weigh those two options for you. But a couple of dual eligible guys available out there.
AJ, when I brought this guy's name up in the preseason, you kind of laughed. But Kevin Hayes is playing very well for St. Louis right now. He's in a third-line center role. The Blues, as I say, are trying to hang around the edge of the playoff race. And he's done his part to contribute with 2 goals and 2 helpers, along with 12 shots on goal in the past week. So doing well, playing some power play time as well. The veteran could be a key player for them as long as they're in the playoff hunt. He's going to get a lot of ice time down the stretch, I think, and they're counting on his experience to continue doing what he's done in the last couple of weeks. Over in Boston, it's surprising that a first-line winger from a top team in the NHL is available in 60% of leagues out there. But that's the case with Jake DeBrusk, AJ. This guy is in an interesting position as a pending free agent in the offseason, and he's going to be highly sought after because he's been such a key player for the Bruins. But again, this year, moved up to the wing on the top line. As I said, only in 40% of leagues. Last week, 2 goals and 1 helper, 15 shots on goal over the 3 games. So he's pouring a lot of pucks at the net and getting rewarded for it right now. The leadership of the Calgary Flames has fallen to Michael Backlund, another guy that I want to highlight here, AJ. This is a team that's really on the fringe of contention, but Backlund is really doing his heavy lifting and had 2 goals and 2 helpers, 9 shots on goal, only 28% owned, and he really was productive last week in 3 games, and he'll be front and center, pardon the pun, playing the middle of the ice for the Flames down the stretch, and they're going to work him hard to, as long as they're in contention. We look at the situation in Philadelphia regularly. Players are on this list, AJ, because this team is getting some goal scoring of late. Last week, Morgan Frost took over first line center role and still only playing about 14 or 15 minutes a game, owned in 3% of leagues out there. But as long as he's getting a run on the first line, that ownership should spike based on a performance like he put up with 2 goals and 2 helpers last week, only 6 shots on goal. So you can say he's being very efficient, but I like this guy's skill set, a former first round pick, finally getting a nice run in Philadelphia and rewarding his team for it.
Well, take us over to the defenseman and want to highlight Keandre Miller. 1 goal, 4 assists last week. He's getting, you know, they've been kind of shuffling things around. So right now it doesn't look like he'll be on the second power play unit tonight, but the minutes have been, there've been more opportunities with Jacob Trouba out of the lineup. He's got 5 points in his last 2 games. Again, a similarly streaky player. There was a long stretch there without any goals, some stretch without points, but as long as Trouba's out of the lineup, I think we'll see more Keandre Miller in terms of minutes, and that's only going to help his production here. I mean, you look at the last 2 games, 23 minutes, 24 minutes. Those are pretty close to season highs, just doing a quick scroll through here. So I like that he's getting more opportunities here. Also mentioned Sean Walker over with his new club with Colorado. 2 goals, 1 assist. Again, Walker is not going to be on the number one power play unit, and really he's not going to be on the second power play unit either. They do have, you know, a wealth of talent there, Devin Toews, Sammy Girard, but should have good matchups. You know, he's not necessarily going to be going up against the top lines all the time. And a sometimes high volume shot guy, you look at his totals from his last couple of games, he had 3, then a 0, then 8, then a 0, then 5, then 3 over his last 6 games. So in the right circumstances, he can put a lot of shots on net. Won't be every single night. Again, at this point in the season, you're probably going to have plenty of these streaky guys available. But those are two names that had really good weeks last week that I'll highlight right off the top here, Paul. And I'll let you take a look at some defensemen you like.
Well, before I go do that, when I'm teasing the injury portion of the show, AJ, there are a number of defensemen that have gone down in the past couple of weeks. And that's why you saw a lot of the defensemen involved in trades at the trade deadline. And you mentioned Sean Walker. He's kind of exhibit A in terms of the benefit of adding to your blue line and what it can result in. Another guy who was in that spot last year was Dmitry Orlov. He was dealt at the deadline. And right now, Carolina is glad that they got him in their fold. He's playing third pair minutes on a very deep defense, but he's capitalizing offensively to the tune of 2 goals and 4 assists last week, leading all defensemen with 51 fantasy points in his 4 outings, tallying 14 shots on goal in those 4 games. So you know he's been very involved in that dynamic offense. And as long as he's playing in Carolina and playing that kind of time, he's going to be exposed with good players around him and a solid pickup, even though he's only owned in 8% of leagues. I think, to borrow your line, AJ, I would stop what I'm doing if I have a hole on defense and run and claim this guy as soon as possible, because it makes too much sense based on where he's at, what he's doing, and how he fits into the Carolina mix. Another guy who is maybe similarly cast is Cam York, although he's not noted for offense. He picked up 4 assists again for Philadelphia. We've highlighted their players a couple of times already today. 32 fantasy points on the week, only owned in 11% of leagues out there. And right now he's paying handsomely for the Flyers to try and hang on to their playoff positioning. Simon Nemec, a youngster in New Jersey, getting a lot of run because of the injured nature of the rest of the blue line there, is a nice pickup too. If you're looking, he's only owned in 5% of leagues, got a goal and 1 helper last week. His forte is not only in terms of scoring, but certainly on the defensive side of the puck. He was one of the top guys, maybe the top guy on our list in terms of block shots, which also factor into scoring in most fantasy leagues these days. And one other name that I'll mention, going back to the New York Rangers, Braden Schneider. Every time I see this guy's name, I cringe because I think the Leafs could have targeted him in his draft year, and that's the guy I touted. He's only owned in 2% of leagues out there, a very tough physical guy. He's got 8 hits, 12 blocks, scored a goal last week, and only owned in 2% of leagues, this guy's going to be a mainstay for the Rangers defense for the next 10 years at least. And I think if you got a hole in your defense, you could do worse than picking a guy from the first place team in the Metro Division.
Well, before I take us into the goalies, I do want to bring up, we've been talking a lot of Flyers tonight. They're in action tonight. So I want to point out, definitely make sure you're going over to rotowire.com, checking out those depth charts, because if you do, you will see that Cam Atkinson, Denis Gurianov, and Sean Couturier are all set to be healthy scratches tonight. Obviously, Atkinson, it's happened. Little surprising to see Gurianov, but to have your team captain, Sean Couturier, getting scratched for tonight's game is a pretty big deal. Now, 15-game goal drought, just 4 assists over that stretch. So there's reasons for that, but clearly they are trying to see what they have in terms of youth. Bobby Brink is in the lineup. Ollie Leixel is in the lineup. Noah Cates. So they want to take a look at some of these younger guys, obviously. But yeah, big news out of Philadelphia that Sean Couturier, along with Gurianov and Atkinson, are set to be healthy scratches tonight. So kind of a big deal there. I'll take us into those goalies. We're going to look, I know most weeks we kind of look at all the players out there, but we'll take a quick look this week at just who's available. And number one on that name has, or on that list rather, has to be Dustin Wolf. You're looking at a guy who is so far seemingly been the starter to take over for the injured Jacob Markstrom. A bit of a rough outing last night. Gave up 4 goals in that loss overall over 5 games, 2-2-0, 3.03 is a goals against average. But as it looks like they're going to ride him rather than Dan Vladar for as long as Jacob Markstrom remains unavailable. Also, Joel Hofer is the top of this list. He's kind of been in and out of, you know, how much work he's getting alongside Jordan Binnington. But Hofer's numbers have looked really good. Even in his one loss this month, he gave up just 3 goals on 32 shots, a decent performance. But back-to-back wins, including giving up just 1 goal on the road against Boston, and then giving up 2 goals in a winning effort at home against Anaheim. So 2 names right at the top that I'll hit off, check off rather right away. Paul, who are you seeing out there that might be available?
Well, Jake Allen is in his new digs in New Jersey, AJ, and he's going to get a lot of playing time over the next couple of weeks because of their goaltending situation being so disheveled, I'll say. And he's going to be looking to make his mark there. He's got 1 more year on his contract, so they want to really see what they've got in him. Picked up a decision last week in his 2 starts and looking good for more playing time there. Daniel Tarasov in Columbus getting a trial by fire on a team that's not going anywhere in the rest of the season is going to get some playing time down the stretch. 2 games played last week. He's receded for 1 win and a total of 2 goals against, 58 saves. So a good week for him. Caden Primo in the new 2 goalie situation in Montreal is going to get more playing time. Even if Samuel Montembeau plays 2 out of every 3 games, Caden Primo is going to be more frequent player as well down the stretch. He appeared in 2 starts last week for the Canadiens, and we can expect that to be most likely a split the rest of the way because there's no need for them to ride Montembeau hard, and Caden Primo has to try and prove himself as the viable second option there, I think. And one more name I'll mention, and it's pertaining to the Winnipeg Jets. I know we've talked about Connor Hellebuyck. Maybe they'll pull on the reins and give the guy a break down the stretch. That means more playing time for Laurent Brossoit, who's been outstanding in a backup role, AJ, and he played only once last week, but again, receded for a win and looked really good doing it. So picking up the shutout, in fact. So behind that stout team defense, he's going to get some starts down the stretch that might be surprisingly good value, I'll say.
Well, I don't have any other top goalies that I'll lead us into, top available goalies here, Paul. So I'll lead us into.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The break. You're listening to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. We'll be back with you in just a bit.
We are back on the podcast with Statsman and AJ, and you're listening to Paul Bruno and AJ Scholes, and we're going to dive into the injury news that hit our books at RotoWire headquarters over the past week, and we have some updates on some players out of the lineup, but some new guys to this list. I'll start us off. I'm going in team order alphabetically, so we'll hit on a few in the lower part of the alphabet and then go to the end through this list. If we go in order, AJ, on the top, I've got Mason McTavish. He was getting a good run as a top six forward in Anaheim, but he's been up and down, in and out of the lineup, and it looks like he's got a lower body injury, missing the last two games. Not too much news in terms of his availability going forward, but you can bet when he's back in the lineup, he's going to be back in a top six role. So if you need a boost on offense, maybe you look there, as this team is going to be playing run-and-gun style the rest of the season, as they always have. On the defense, they're missing Radko Gudas, a guy who is a big baggage smasher and helpful if you're looking for hits and block shots. But right now, he's dealing with an upper body injury, having missed the last two games. We move on to Arizona, and I see Barrett Hayton, a guy who was an excellent player in Canadian Junior, trying to find his sea legs in Arizona, has had a bit of an up and down season. And right now, it's down because he's dealing with a lower body injury, having missed the last three games. The Boston Bruins are waiting for Patrick Maroon to make his appearance with the club, but he's still listed as week-to-week with a back injury. Don't know what that means for him in terms of availability for the rest of the regular season, but I wonder if it might bleed into the postseason and make that trade a moot point. They tried to add some physicality, but hard to be physical when you're in the infirmary. So I'll throw it back to you, and you can take us on to players, some of whom are in playoff hunts, and their impact is more meaningful to their clubs in the near term.
Yeah, so for Carolina, Teuvo Teravainen has missed the last two games, upper body injury there. So a significant loss for them. That's going to see Seth Jarvis and Martin Nikash moved into bigger roles for them. So obviously having Jake Gensel certainly helps bolster the wing department with Teravainen out. Jacob Markstrom has now missed five games. Again, Dustin Wolf getting the look there. There really just hasn't been a ton of available information on Markstrom. It looks yeah, just, you know, he's supposed to start on the 12th and then didn't end up starting after all. And it's just kind of been this continuing issue. So no news is not necessarily good news in Calgary there. Logan O'Connor will miss the rest of the season for Colorado. He's headed for hip surgery. Not a huge loss overall based on that team, but a solid bottom six producer. Tyler Seguin for Dallas, expected back maybe in a week. He's been out for a while. Similarly, Dylan Larkin practicing today. They're unsure about Thursday for Larkin. Maybe it's a possibility. But, Paul, I will kick it back to you to continue to lead us through the injury news out there.
Yeah, there's another guy on a team in contention that is a big blow, and we don't know too much about the lower body injury for Joel Eriksson-Ek, but he's been a top six player for the Wild all year long, and that's a tough blow for that team on the fringe of playoff contention. So we'll hopefully have more news for him next week when we convene again. In New Jersey, their defense has been really ravaged by injury, and Jonas Siegenthaler was on the wrong end of a big hit from the big rookie in New York, who is facing a suspension right now. And Siegenthaler out with a concussion, missing three games so far, and it looks like it could be a little while longer on a very depleted defense. That's a real problem for the Devils. Dante Fabbro with the Nashville club. This team is also on the fringe of playoff contention. He's dealing with an upper body injury and could miss two or three more weeks. We go to a non-playoff team and see that Josh Norris is out with a shoulder injury for the Senators. He's missed a little bit of time on and off this season, but produced good numbers when he's been healthy, and they really count on him for this to help drive this offense in a second line role. He's definitely done for the season, though, as he's facing shoulder surgery, and that puts him on the sideline. Yes, that's right. That's a key point, actually, too. And a couple of injuries in Seattle. Jaden Schwartz, an upper body injury, having missed the last four games. That's a top shooter offensively. And on the blue line, Vince Dunn with an upper body injury has missed six games so far. And this might be the worst team in terms of providing information, AJ, that I've seen most recently. Neither one giving us a real sense for when these guys are hurt, are going to come back. Case in point, Vince Dunn, he's had the day-to-day tag despite missing six games. But two-week period. So they got to do better than that to help our fantasy owners out. We're going to dig for more between now and next week to see what we can unearth in either of those situations.
Well, I guess then I'll take Toronto. I didn't think you were going to stop there, Paul. I figured you'd continue running through that. But Cali Yarnkroc back with a hand injury again. He's on LTIR, so we're not going to see him maybe the rest of the regular season here, for sure, not until April. A significant blow there. Connor Timmins continues to slowly work his way back. We haven't seen him in a game, I don't think, yet. No. He hasn't played yet, but he had mono starting to get back. Ilya Labushkin's been out of the lineup due to illness. Hopefully not the same thing. Because that, you know, just with how long Timmins was out, it'd be tough to lose Labushkin for that long. And then, of course, you know, Mitch Marner continues to be out of the lineup, has missed three at this point. Again, Paul, I'll lead you in here. I don't know if you've heard anything additional up there, but we don't have any added information as to when he might be back. Right now, we're sort of projecting Saturday as a possibility. But I haven't seen anything to change or really set that date at this point.
Yeah, yesterday I heard a clip of their coach, Sheldon Keefe, really being a little playful with his words. He said he's day-to-day away from being day-to-day. And what that means is he's not with the Leafs in their back-to-back road games to start the week. But as you suggest, he might be staying behind to see if he can ramp up his skating and get ready for the weekend. But if not this week, I expect him to be playing next week. It's not a long-term thing. They just want to be real careful with one of their key players on this roster. Two more injury notes, AJ, before we go into the DFS portion of our show. Thatcher Demko, we touched on this injury. He missed two games last week, could miss at least four more games, according to most recent reports. That's a tough blow. You want to have your starting goalie healthy as the postseason approaches. But with 3 weeks to go, 4 weeks to go, I think they're pretty safe in assuming that they will get him back. But in the meantime, you'll get your goalie wins from elsewhere on that roster. And a former Pittsburgh Penguin goalie might factor into that mix. There, I've made a Pittsburgh reference for you. Closing out the injury situation, Winnipeg Jets' Gabe Vilardi has missed 9 games so far with an enlarged spleen. That's a dangerous-sounding injury, AJ. We wish him well and hope that he can get back in the fold, because he, too, is a useful player on this offense. Not only can he play an offensive role, but he brings physicality at such a premium asset when the playoffs do roll around. And as mentioned, we will close out the show with a look at the DFS strategy and a busy slate of games tonight. AJ, I'll leave it to you to lead us off. What was your strategy in planning for the DraftKings portion of your lineup predictions?
Yeah, I tried to, as always, try to capitalize on some matchups. Got a couple of shares of the Flyers, a couple of shares of Detroit, Toronto without all those guys that we just mentioned. Maybe there's an opportunity to get some points there, and the Flyers are at home. So we'll see how that one pans out. But yeah, just, looking at matchups primarily, and I'll touch on those more when I get to each player. The first one being Leon Draisaitl, $8,000. Edmonton playing at home against Montreal. I don't really need to say much more about that. I've got my mini Flyer stack here. I got Morgan Frost, who you mentioned, Paul, has been on a bit of a heater lately. First line role, first power play, coming in at just $4,400. Kind of a steal there for him. And I'll pair him up with line mate Travis Konechny. They're on the top line together. They're on that first power play unit together. Konechny a little bit more expensive of the two at $6,400, but I like his recent run since returning from injury. No goals yet since coming back, but 4 assists and 17 shots in 5 games. So he's getting opportunities there. For my other two wingers, going to Nashville, they're at home against San Jose. Gustav Nyquist playing on the top line with Philip Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly, comes in at just $5,300 here. He's been on a pretty solid run, 10 assists, 3 goals in his last 9 games, 4 of those helpers coming with the man advantage. I had to find a cheap spot to go. I'll go with the Penguins and go with Drew O'Connor at $3,600, as long as he continues to be on that top line with Crosby and Rust, and that's showing up in his numbers lately. 4 points in his last 4 games, 12 shots over that stretch. Hard to not target a guy playing with Crosby when you don't even have to pay $4,000 for him. Defensively, I went with Filip Hronek in Vancouver. I think Vancouver is a great place to target right now. Of course, you're going to have to pay a premium to get Quinn Hughes, but Hronek on the second unit there. No points recently, but a decent amount of shots. Again, it's a solid matchup at home against Buffalo, and an assist on the power play could easily be an option for him. Similarly, Moritz Seider for Detroit at home against Columbus, $5,300 is his price tag. He's on the top unit for them, playing with Patrick Kane, Lucas Raymond, Robbie Fabry, and Alex DeBrincat. So a good assignment here. And then I'm going to just double down there. Stick with that power play unit. Go with Lucas Raymond as my utility spot. $4,600 is the price tag there. And then in goal, I am going to go with either. I haven't seen a confirmation either way, but I'm going to go with either Marc-Andre Fleury or Filip Gustavsson at $8,300. They're the same price on DraftKings either way. They're on the road, but they are going up against Anaheim. Fleury especially has been playing better lately. So I think if he's in, I feel even better about it, to be totally honest. But overall, I like the matchup for Minnesota. Fleury, for his part, 4-0-1 in his last 5 games with a 1.56 save percentage. Really looking phenomenal right now. So I hope it's Fleury, but even if it is Gustavsson, I'll roll with him in this matchup as well.
AJ, and just listening to your lineup and your explanation, it seems we were like-minded in our thoughts and preparation for tonight's DFS 13-game slate. I tried to save money across the board and have a balanced roster, but I'm looking at the way I constructed it. We only agree on one position, and so it's interesting there. But I peppered my roster with three centers. I saved one for the one of the utility spots and got three first-line centers, all playing against bottom feeder teams in the league. So I really like the fact that I was able to get them in and get them in cheaply. I started with Ryan O'Reilly in Nashville. You mentioned they have a lopsided matchup against San Jose. He's playing center on the top line and power play on the top line. Had a very nice season over there for the Predators. Coming in at $6,800 tonight has a great chance to pad those stats. I'm looking at Los Angeles Kings hosting Chicago tonight. And similarly cast Anze Kopitar. He's been in a bit of a dry spell tonight, but I think this could be a coming out party for that. $6,500 the price tag. I expect a shootout between the Kings and the Hawks. And Kopitar is well positioned to capitalize there, playing center on the top line and power play on the top unit as well. Over on the wing, I got Matt Zuccarello. He's a DFS darling for me, AJ. I confess to liking this guy whenever certain matchups come up. And tonight is one of those situations. He's one of the premier pass first wingers in the league. He's picked up 5 points in his last seven games, but I like the fact that he's shooting more, 17 shots on goal and a plus eight. So you can see being very responsible at both ends of the ice. $6,400 the price tag against the lowly Anaheim Ducks, who are decimated at center, missing their top two in that position. And I think they're easy pickings for the Wild tonight. A tip of your goaltending call on that one. That's the one we agreed on tonight, incidentally. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, I had to get a piece of the Edmonton Oilers against Montreal. Look, I think in Montreal, the Oilers' young guns are pointing at this game thinking, we want to put on a show tonight. I think it could be a lopsided win for the visitors. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins comes in a lot cheaper than McDavid and Draisaitl, so I got him in for $7,000 as my most expensive piece on tonight's list. And then I go over to the defense and I pick a couple of defensemen who are wielding a hot stick right now. Shane Gostisbehere needs to fan the flagging hopes of the Red Wings. They got a good matchup against Columbus tonight. And Gostisbehere is on a 5-game point scoring streak in this must-win tilt. The power play linchpin at quarterback position there should be featured frequently tonight in a game where he'll get those chances with the odd man. But even if it's even strength, I think that the porous nature of Columbus's defense and goaltending should have given him plenty of opportunities to score points. Hampus Lindholm has been quiet most of the season in Boston. Last year, there was much fanfare around this guy as being an experienced guy who could score with the best of them on the blue line. He hasn't had the big point scoring season that we might have expected in a great situation in Boston. Playing behind McAvoy, though, in the second tier of the power play, he faces the Buffalo Sabres tonight. Comes in on a hot streak himself with 5 points in 4 games since he returned from injury. So I'm betting that this trend can continue. He's the cheapest guy in my lineup for $4,000. Then in terms of the utility guys, my third center that I picked is going back to Minnesota, looking at their matchup against Anaheim. I think it's going to be a lopsided score in favor of the visitors. Hartman for $5,600 is a guy who's playing first line minutes at center, first line on the power play. And I think they're going to feast on the Ducks tonight, as you implied, and I'll agree. And then I talked about this guy earlier in the show, going back to the Boston matchup against Buffalo. The Bruins are got to be a bit upset with the Sabres this year. They've caused them a little bit of grief, beating them at least once and coming close another time. $5,000 the price tag for DeBrusque, though. He's wielding a hot stick, AJ, with 9 points in his last 7 games played, 21 shots on goal. He's elevated himself to wing on the top line and power play on the top unit, which is very prolific as well. And as I mentioned, in the Nets, I have Gustafsson listed as the starting goalie for Minnesota, but that's not been confirmed, as you suggested. But either one is going to be priced at $8,100. That's really the most expensive on my roster. Made a mistake in saying that about Nugent Hopkins. But Gustafsson, a very safe bet in that game against Anaheim. The Ducks come in on a 6-game losing streak, and I think by the end of the night, it'll be up to 7. So after we win that money for you guys tonight, we want to turn our attention a little bit to baseball with a look at some of the RotoWire resources. AJ, I had some fun with this last week. I started to do some mock auctions out there, and I leaned on the auction values that RotoWire provides for baseball planning. I did 3 or 4 mocks, and the auction values really seem to be a very good guideline, AJ, that I'm going to lean on more and more. And I think they do it for I know they do it for the NHL as well, but that has come and gone as we're well into that season. So turning to baseball, I thought, let's take a look at some of the resources that we have there in terms of helping you plan for the upcoming drafts. And this was a real terrific resource for me.
Yeah, I think, you know, some of the other tools within the My Leagues, one of my favorite things, we have a draft analyzer, and that's available for, you know, all sports. It's available for NHL, basketball, football, obviously. Those ones not going to do any good now. But so, yeah, just a great way, especially if you're in multiple leagues. You know, how did I draft in this first one? What changes should I make for a second one? That sort of thing. Try to pinpoint where, at least based on our projections, you went right or you went wrong.
I like that, AJ. I'm going to ask you more about that when we go off the air. I got to learn about that one. So here we are, AJ, 4 weeks away from the end of the regular season. We touched on the fact that we're going to spend more time looking at the races and remaining games for the contending teams and talk less about the non-contenders. Safe to say that there's not much going to be going on in about half the teams in the league, but we're looking at focusing on the top half of the league and the serious shooting around the corner and some great stuff, great content today, as usual, I think, that we can have our listeners sink their teeth into, and we're going to keep that up and then some in upcoming weeks. We want to thank you for listening to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. As always, remind you that we're here to help you with all things relating to your enjoyment of fantasy hockey. So we really encourage you to send your comments or questions on Twitter, where you can also follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22, and you can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. So long, everybody. Have a great week.